How do we inspire the next generation to see golf courses as a place of opportunity and a rewarding career? Jenny Bledge, Biggar's Workforce and Careers Lead, is responsible for the First Green initiative that's becoming a powerful tool for introducing young people into careers in the turf industry. With a background in education and information governance, she's helping to connect classrooms with golf courses and show people how STEM subjects come to life in the real world. Jenny's our guest on the Biggar podcast, and she discusses the origins of First Green and the impact the programme is having on clubs, schools and on the wider turf industry. So what does a typical First Green day look like at a golf course? How have new greenkeepers been inspired to join the profession because of First Green? And how can clubs and schools get involved? Jenny, welcome to the Biggar podcast. Great to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're going to spend a lot of time talking about First Green, but we usually like to start these podcasts by talking a little bit about you. So obviously you've been at Biggar for a couple of years now. Tell us about how you came to work for the association and what your role is.
Yeah, so I've been at Biggar since 2023, and I was not working in the industry before. I've got a link to the industry via my husband and living on a golf course, but it wasn't something particularly that I was seeking out. But an opportunity came up for a role project managing First Green. And I was contacted by Sammy Strutt, who knew that I had a little bit of a background in education and asked if I might be interested in applying for it. So I had a look at the job description and thought, yeah, that looks really interesting. I really sort of think that would be something that I'd be quite good at. And so went ahead for the interview, had to do a big presentation for a panel, talking about how I could sort of bring the programme of First Green, of which we'll talk about, to the country. And yeah, so was offered the job, and yeah, it's been amazing ever since. So yeah, it's been a very busy 3 years, but yeah, I've loved every second.
But you're not obviously a stranger to greenkeeping. I mean, clearly you worked in education and information governance before, but as you said, your husband is James, the course manager at Royal Liverpool. So was it I don't want to say an easy environment, but was it an environment that you were familiar with and could slip into?
I think for me, that's the part that the spark almost, that when I was sort of looking at the job description, I was like, oh no, there's parts of that I can't do. But actually, when I looked at it and realised, you know, the connections that I had, the friendships that I already had in the industry, the things that I understand about the industry, about how greenkeepers operate and how they work and, you know, the hours that they work and, you know, the hardships that they face in terms of looking for staff, etc. I had all that anyway. So yeah, it has massively helped in the role, and it really, really, it helps when I'm developing the programme and developing, you know, resources, that I've got that in the back of my mind. And also I've got, you know, my own little focus group at home that I can use for all this stuff, this little unpaid focus group all the time. It's great.
We're obviously going to spend a lot of time talking about First Green. It's the reason you are a guest on the podcast. But in the 3 years you've been in the job, how has it changed and how have you had to develop along with it?
Yeah, I think when I first started, the Biggar, Sammy and Jim, they weren't quite sure where to go with First Green. They you know, we'll talk a bit about what it is, but they had bought the license and just realised, I think, quite quickly on that they just didn't have the capacity to really, within the team, to roll out, and they probably needed somebody specific leading on that project. And so the ball was really put in my court to say, like, you know, take it, do what you think it needs to be done with it. You know, let's see what resources you need, what support, etc. And so, yeah, that part of it has evolved massively over time in terms of me just taking that project and running with it. And then since then, my role has developed slightly more into a more careers in education and workforce focus. So since June this year, I now sit within the education team, and my role has changed from workforce project manager to workforce and careers lead, and just so that we can really expand that offering that we give our members in terms of workforce advice and support and how we can encourage, you know, the next generation into the industry, but also just to help our members with their career choices and what they want to do within their careers and how we can develop that resource and toolkit on the website as well.
And First Green is a fundamental part of this. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about it in some detail, if we could. And just tell us a little bit, if you would, about First Green and what it aims to do.
So First Green at its core is an educational outreach programme. So it started in America about 26 years ago, I think now. And it was two superintendents over there who decided that they wanted to give back to their local community. So they created some resources where they would invite local schools to come and learn about what it's like to be a greenkeeper. And, you know, obviously schools bite your hand off to do these sort of things. So that ran, you know, they did that themselves. And then when they decided to retire, they gifted the programme to the GCSAA, who are the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America. And they have been running the programme really successfully since they took it on. So much so that they now license it out to other countries. And obviously we bought the license. So we have it, Australia have it, and Canada have the license. So we've had it since 2023. And essentially, we were given the framework from America, and we then had to just decide what we wanted to do with it. So it was very American, obviously. So we had to spend quite a bit of time making that work for the UK curriculum. You know, there's four different curriculum across the country, making sure that worked for all the schools, making sure it tied in with the curriculum, showing the schools exactly how it links to what they're currently learning. And a big aspect of that is the STEM element. So STEM, for those that don't know, is a really important education approach. So it's using science, technology, engineering and maths to help with young people's learning. And when it comes to careers and greenkeeping in particular, you know, greenkeepers use that every single day in all of their jobs. But when it comes to careers, it's really important to try and show a lot of young people that it's not just your normal jobs that use STEM, that there are a lot of different careers out there that use STEM. And First Green is a really great way to use that and to show that off. And so, we have this framework that we create for our members, and we encourage them to host these events. It's their event. It's a bespoke event that they run themselves. We don't come and stand there and deliver the event, but we give you all the tools to do it. We give our members a complete guidebook to do it, all the resources, and they run it how they want to run it, and they can use us as much as they want for support.
And ultimately, the aim is to introduce prospective people into the industry, and we'll talk about how it's expanding later on, but primarily this is young people in the first instance, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. I think we never, when we started out, we never ever wanted to target a specific age group. I think for a lot of clubs and a lot of people, yes, the target is you want to catch them when they're leaving school, you want to catch them in year 10, 11 when they're thinking about what choices. But we've always said it's important to catch the younger ones as well. So upper primary, year 6 and 7, year 5, 6, and then into 7 when they go to secondary, to try and catch them before they're thinking about what subjects they want to take, because there's so much research into the decisions that young people are making at primary school and the subjects that they're interested in, and they follow them throughout high school. So if you're catching them at that stage, it's really important to, you know, have and ignite that little bit of a spark in them. So we have clubs that do it with primary and secondary, and we obviously have got lots of plans with this to take it even further, that, you know, First Green doesn't have to be limited by age. It could be, you know, older people, second careers, etc. as well.
So what was your plan at the start? I mean, you're brought in with a really quite wide brief, I would imagine. What were your first thoughts on taking on the project? It's obviously a massive success in America, but as you alluded to earlier, you know, that's for an American audience, and you obviously need to put Bigger's mark on it. You need to put a mark on it that's going to be applicable. As you said earlier on as well, there are four different curriculums. So what were your first thoughts on taking on the project, and what were your initial findings?
I think for us, it's important that we wanted to make it as easy as possible for clubs and our members to use. You know, these clubs are really busy. Our members are busy. They work core hours. You know, they're in very early. They finish at 2 o'clock. They're off. They don't often then want to sit at a computer and read screeds and screeds of documents and things after that. So it was important that we just made it as accessible as possible. So we worked with an organisation called STEM Learning UK, who are based in York. And we contracted them to help us sort of rewrite the lesson plans so that they were easy for our members to use, showed them exactly what they had to do in the day, but also, on the flip side, showed the school that we'd really thought about this, showed the educators that this really means something, that you can use this as part of your careers in education and science and maths, you know, learning. So that was, for me, the biggest part of it, is to nail that part. But, you know, it's a developing thing. We're a couple of years down the line and we want to develop them again. There's things that we've learned from those things that we first put out that we maybe want to scale back a little bit. Just from feedback that we've got from members and things that, you know, everybody learns things in a different way and everybody wants to do it. But I think you don't want to scare them off either. So we need to make it, you know, accessible for everyone. People like to read it. Some people like to listen how to do it. Some people like to listen to a podcast about how to do a first screen. So doing things like this really helps. But yeah, for in the start, it was just making it as easy as possible and not scaring anyone away.
Well, let's get into the long grass with it. I was going to say weeds, but probably not appropriate on Greenkeepers podcast. So let's get into the long grass with this. How does it work? What does a typical first green field trip look like?
Yeah, so a first green field trip essentially is a 2 to 3 hour visit to your golf course. It doesn't have to be a full day. It doesn't have to be a long event. It can be whatever you want it to be, but generally they're 2 to 3 hours. So once you've got this first step of enlisting a local school or a group or a class or a junior section to come along, you work with the school to plan what you're going to do within those few hours. So you would have stations. So you would hold it on a safe area on the golf course and you would have a set of stations, maybe 4 or 5 stations. Now, those stations would comprise of different elements that link into STEM and greenkeeping. And so we've created a toolkit of about 13 lesson plans that they can pick from, that they can help to run those stations. They're not limited by those. They can do whatever they want. We've had greenkeepers rip out the side of a bunker and rebuild it 5 times. We've had autonomous mowers as a complete station. And then we always encourage to, you know, make sure golf's a part of it as well. So you'll get the pros involved, maybe want to do a bit of a putting competition or get the pro out to give them a couple of lessons on how to putt. And then that's it, really. What you don't want to do is stand up in front of a group of 35 students and talk to them about how great it is to be a greenkeeper, because, yeah, that's great. But after 2 minutes, you've already lost them because they can see all the cool stuff behind you and they just want to get going. So, yeah, it's a hands-on, really fun way of learning about a different kind of career, but they're also getting, you know, learning about maths and science, but they don't really think they are at the same time.
And how is that being delivered? Is that being delivered by the greenkeepers themselves?
Yep. So we have seen it happen with full teams. So there have been clubs that have had every single member of the greenkeeping team involved. We don't encourage that because we understand, you know, working golf courses, you know, you need some staff on and some staff not. Also, it's not everyone's cup of tea. Not everybody wants to stand up in front of a group of students. It's quite daunting. So it could be that you put it out to your team and say, like, who's up for doing this? You know, we maybe only need 3 or 4 of you who wants to be involved. Some clubs have had members involved. So members who are maybe on committees have got quite a keen interest in horticulture or ecology. They've led stations. We've had reps involved as well, so reaching out to your local reps and your organisations and your companies that you use to come in and talk about seeds and soil and seed science. There's loads of different avenues there. You can involve loads of different people. It doesn't have to be limited to just the greenkeepers. And ultimately, we want this to be a holistic event as well. You want to get the club involved. You want to get, you know, the staff from the clubhouse involved as well.
And how can you support those greenkeepers that would want to get involved in this, are keen to get involved in this, but might be nervous, essentially giving a lesson in front of a lot of different people?
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the first things that comes up is people say, we want to do it, but I know that my team would be quite hesitant. And that's absolutely understandable. We never want anyone to feel forced into doing something they don't want to do. But equally, having seen people do it who were nervous about it and the buzz that they have after it and that they want to do it again, we always try and tell people, like, you know, this will be great for you. It's great for your confidence. It's great for your, you know, your skill building. But we put them in touch with other clubs. So we'll put them in touch with previous champions that have held events just to give them advice, because, you know, I can tell people till the cows come home, you should do this, it's amazing. But I'm not doing their job day in and day out, and I'm not feeling how they're feeling. So it's important that they speak to other people who have held the events and understand what happened and how they felt. And we always ask in the feedback at the end, you know, give me a score out of 5. How were you feeling before the event? And it's always 1, 2, was really nervous, was really scared. And then how were you feeling at the end? And it's always elated. It was amazing. It's the best thing we've ever done. So, and equally, we always put in our lesson plans and our guide as well. You're not there to stand up in front of a group of students and teach them, because what they'll do is they'll rotate around the station. So you'd maybe only have a group of 10 at your station at any one time. You're not expected to stand up there and deliver a lesson. They've got staff with them. They've got parents with them. They will help to encourage the conversation. And then we also put keywords and sort of questions that they could ask. So we give them sort of guide language to use as well, just to try and help them. But what really happens is on the day, the kids end up leading it. And it just, you know, they forget and within 5 minutes that they were even worried.
I think one of the things I just wanted to go back to earlier that you said was the number of templates there were within the lesson plans. So that feels like you're advocating sort of 4 or 5 stations, and yet there are up to, I think you said, 25 to 30 templates. It feels like there's quite a lot of flexibility within what people can do and the day that they can provide to their visitors.
Yeah, that's it. So there's 13 lesson plans, but they're... Yeah, but they're sort of varied. So some of them talk about the bath. So how far does the ball roll? Cool tools that they use, technology on the golf course, biodiversity and ecology. There are other ones that talk about water and using water in the golf course. Now, some golf courses don't have water. So we've tried to make it that, you know, we don't ever encourage you to send all of those lesson plans to a school because it's overwhelming. Pick what you feel comfortable with as a golf club and say, right, well, we can do the maths one, we can do the cool tools, we can do the biodiversity one, but actually we've got bees on the golf course. I'd quite like to talk to them about how we make our own honey. Fine, that can be its own station in itself. People are quite clever about it and how they do their own stations. And, you know, you're doing bespoke, a lot of these golf courses are doing really wonderful things that you want, that could be a whole station in itself. So they're a guide, they're there to be a guide, and we're looking at ways that we can develop them even further to make sure that we're really including the engineering side as well, and getting, you know, the our mechanics and people that are skilled in that area to come out and talk to young people about, you know, what they do on the golf courses as well, because I think for a lot of young people, they would never have thought that there's people doing that at a golf club either.
Yeah, I noticed you've said a number of times now, essentially, apologies if I'm paraphrasing you, don't just stand up in front of the kids and basically give a speech. So it feels like the idea behind First Green is to make it practical, to get stuck in really as much as possible and try and avoid that lesson structure that young people are getting day in, day out at school.
And that's it. I think with COVID, there was a lot of... that taken away, that, you know, they're then sat in classrooms or sat at computers and things, and the benefits of learning away from the classroom are amazing. There's so many reports and studies into that, and schools are biting your hand off to do these sorts of things. They really want to do that, and they get a lot of funding to do these types of things as well. So yeah, I think that's it. You don't want to stand up there and talk to them for ages. Yeah, you want to do a little bit of an intro about who you are and what you are. And, you know, some clubs might do the field trip and then they'll cut it in half and they'll take them in for lunch and give them soup and sandwiches or chips or whatever. Some golf courses do it where it's a whole day event, but it's not just the greenkeeping. So the greenkeeping is a small aspect of it, but they're doing a whole careers in golf at that sort of resort or bigger golf club where there's more careers. So it's kids getting out of school and being able to have a conversation, being able to talk to people, being able to use their hands and see things and ask lots of questions, it's so important. And the schools and the educators really value those opportunities as well.
Have you found that it has some ancillary benefits as well? I mean, there are a lot of perceptions about the role of greenkeepers and what golf clubs are like as well, particularly traditional private members golf clubs. Do you think that First Green has helped to break down some of those barriers? You know, as young people, as parents, as teachers go into golf clubs, see what's happening within golf clubs these days, see what the greenkeepers are doing, it kind of shifts the thoughts they might have had before they took on the visit.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And some conversations I might have had with clubs in the past where they'll say, you know, I really want to do First Green, but we're not really looking for staff at the minute. And that's fine. You're right. It's not just about that. It's about that community connection as well that you're building with your community, because, you know, a lot of these golf courses have got big high fences or they've got they're tree lined, and you're instantly saying, if you're not a golfer, that's not for me. I'm not allowed in there. That's not what I do. We don't understand golf. We don't know. But for a lot of these young people that live in these areas, they don't want to move away from home, and you're ultimately missing a real opportunity here to show them that there's a big employer here. There's lots of jobs at these golf courses. So yeah, it's massive when you bring the schools in and the teachers come, and you know they're not golfers, they don't understand anything about it, but they just feel so lucky and so grateful that they've been able to come in and see what goes on behind these fences. Because yeah, you don't want to be seen as stuffy and that, you know, you're closing the door on people. You want to have that open door policy, and this can reap so many rewards, especially for clubs where we've had, you know, we held one at Dudley a couple of years ago, and they had quite a bit of vandalism. There's lots of clubs that get vandalism. This is a really great way of showing these young people what the hard work that goes into this, that they might go home and be like, okay, really rethink about, you know, setting fire to a bunker or mucking about in a bunker, or, you know, there's a lot of hard work goes into that. So yeah, it has loads of benefits.
If you're enjoying this episode and would like to put your organisation in front of our audience, then we'd love to hear from you. Podcast sponsorship is a great way to support the work we do while reaching an engaged community of greenkeeping professionals as well as the wider turf industry. To find out more about sponsorship opportunities, please contact our team by email on sales@bigger.co.uk.
And it builds wider community links as well. You know, the school, when they have a positive experience like that at the golf club, when they're thinking about other things that they might want to be doing, they might point their direction back to the golf club.
Absolutely. And we've seen that in itself, that clubs who have held events with school now get invited up to the school for careers events. So they'll have like speed dating careers events where they have little round robins in the hall. And they would never have got invited previously, or they might not even have gone to the school to look for that as an opportunity. So that's great in itself. On the flip side, we've had clubs that have wanted to do a First Green, but what they've done it is the other way around. They've gone to the school first, and they've done a presentation about greenkeeping. From that, they've then said, we're going to take the kids that have shown a keen interest, so there may be 10, 15, and they're going to come and do a visit to the golf course. So they've got that real engaged group of young people to spend a couple hours in the golf course. So yeah, massively it has. And also the schools speak, they have forums, they talk to each other. It's mutually beneficial for everyone, really.
So First Green's primary focus, I would say, is to help young people learn about careers in golf, and particularly careers in greenkeeping. So how does the programme do that? We've talked about, you know, a typical first day and the inspirational qualities that can be passed on to youngsters from seeing greenkeepers at work. But how does the programme achieve that primary aim?
Yeah, so I think your key focus there is with your secondary school students, obviously, because you've got them, you know, making decisions about school. And I think for a lot of clubs, if you are looking for staff, you're struggling to get people to respond to your adverts, you're maybe looking to start getting some apprentices in or some seasonals, that's your easy win. So we had a golf club who hosted an event with the high school. They had their hands in their pockets the whole time. They didn't say much. They looked like, you know, they're straight off the school bus at 9 o'clock in the morning learning maths on the golf course. They didn't look like they were having a great time. They sort of warmed up a little bit. And then at the end, the course manager had a queue of, I think, about 7 or 8 kids who wanted to speak to him. He's since taken 2 or 3 of those on that are now on the payroll. And one of them, so they do sort of Saturday work, etc. And one of them is now shadowing, so that when the next apprenticeship position comes up, he will go straight into that role. So we're seeing instant results for that. And that's brilliant. I think that's amazing. That's what you want to see. But you've got a captive audience there. If you're looking to have a steady stream of people coming in, you link with a local high school and host an event once a year. You've got a steady stream of young people that maybe don't want to leave where they live, and that can, the next time you're looking for jobs, you can go straight to the school. They've already spent time in the golf course. It's a win-win, really.
Yeah, and does the programme adapt depending on the age of the children who are involved in the visit? I mean, I sense it does. We've talked a little bit about planting the seed in very younger children, and we will talk a bit more about, you know, some of the practicalities of older children who have forged an interest through a First Green visit. But the programme does adapt, does it, depending on the age of the people involved?
Yeah, so the lesson plans that we've created they've got sort of age groups on them, and you can see who they're targeted at, but they're completely flexible and you instantly know the type of language that you're going to use with people. That's where that conversation with the school comes in really beneficially. So when you make that first contact, when I say you, the members, when they make the first contact with the school, we always encourage, get them up for a visit, go and have a coffee, show them what you want to do, show them where you're going to have it on the golf course, and talk through some of the lesson plans, and they'll be able to tell you, our children are really switched on with their maths, so they're really good with that. I think that would be really good for them to do. You know, they might be learning a specific subject, or they might be talking about water or water conservation and that kind of thing. That might be a key thing to discuss on the day, just to be led a little bit by the school as well, because they know those kids inside and out, and they'll know what they're going to be engaged with and what they're not. But they surprise you. All age groups really surprised me as to what they're into and what they're not. We've had one where it was in Ireland, where they did a whole station where they were building the bug hotels, and it was quite an older group of kids. And at the start, I thought, I wonder if that might be a bit young for them, but that was probably one of their favourite parts. The kids just loved building the bug hotels, and they had all the stuff out. They had all the different trays of things that they could use to make it, and they were talking about why they do it, and it was just really interesting. And I think, yeah, these young people really surprise you as to what they get engaged with.
And at the very least, isn't it, it gives those people who attend a real opportunity to see what greenkeepers do, to actually see what they do.
Yeah, definitely. I think for a lot of these clubs as well, you know, golf's, there's so much work goes on in terms of growing the game and growing golf, and it's brilliant. You see so much going on there with, like, Unleash Your Drive and lots of different things, and there's loads of programs now and funding for schools to get out and do golf, which is brilliant. But we want to show the other side as well. We want to show them the hard work that goes into making golf happen. And a lot of these kids live nearby lots of golf courses, or they see them on the telly. You know, we've had the Open at Birkdale, where, you know, lots of roads are shut off. The kids probably had to finish school a week early. And if they're not into golf, they maybe don't really understand why. So I think being able to link that a little bit with the community, it just makes everyone feel a bit more okay about what's going on and understanding of it.
So if there are some greenkeepers out there who are thinking about bringing First Green to their club, what encouragement can you give to them to do that?
Just to take that first step. It is scary. And the one thing we all hear is, we want to do it, it's just not the right time. And I completely understand. It's like everything in life. There's never a right time, is there? But just taking that first step to getting in touch with us and having a discovery call. I've got a really good girl in my team who supports me and setting up those first sort of connections. Eve, if you get in touch with us and say you're interested in hosting a First Green event, that doesn't mean we're going to send a busload of kids to your school. We don't do that. It's up to you to make those connections. We just make those steps easier for you. So we'll have a discovery call with you, talk a bit about what First Green is, what we've spoken about today, what it means, what your questions are, what your worries are, what you don't understand about it. And then we can be there as much or as little as the member wants. You know, we have a real mix of its members getting in touch that want to do it, and the club will get in touch and say, we've seen this, we really want to do it, but we're not sure our greenkeeping team will be on board. And that's fine. Our focus is the greenkeepers, as our members, and we want to make sure they're supported so we can make that happen. And, you know, we've had some clubs that have said they wanted to do it, and it's been a year and a half before they've been able to make it happen. There's no right or wrong here. There's no rush. It's as long as people feel supported enough to do it and feel confident enough to do it, then they should.
So while we're talking about this, it's probably worth explaining to people how they can do that. Is there a website? Is there a member requirement from the courses, from the greenkeepers that are looking to get involved? How do you sort of have that idea, and how do you take it to next steps?
Yep. So as long as a club has at least one full member currently working there, they can access all the resources, they can access our support, guidance, everything. So they can either reach out to me on jenny@bigger.co.uk, or they can go to the website. There is a careers tab, and on the bottom of that is a First Green page. So it gives you all the information about what First Green is, about what we've spoken about today. There's a little video of an event that took place at Hoylake. And then you've got different pages. So all the resources, once you're logged in, you can download the resources. We've done a little bit of a sort of podcast talking through the guide. So for those that like to listen to how to do it more, that's available. And then we can put you in touch with previous hosts. You can have that conversation with people. What we always do as well is encourage, whenever there's events that take place, we always share them online because we encourage local members to go and see them. And we've had that quite a lot where people have wanted to do it, not really sure, they can't really visualise what it's going to look like. So we'll always say, go along to an event taking place. You don't have to go and actually help lend a hand, but go and support your local club that's nearby you, and you can see it in action. You can say, well, actually, we could do that at our golf club, or that wouldn't work. But it's just sometimes easier just to see, you know, what it looks like firsthand, really. But yeah, that's it, really. It's just about reaching out and getting in touch with us and letting us know that you want to do it. And as long as we know that, we don't hound you. We just make sure you're supported through it. And yeah, we just want to encourage as many clubs as possible to get involved.
Yeah, and just to be clear to listeners, that member requirement is at least one full member of Bigger,
the
association. Yeah. So what happens following an initial First Green visit then? How do you collect feedback, and what do you do with that?
So at the end of every event, we send out feedback forms to all the hosts that sort of led the whole sort of event. And when I say the host, it doesn't need to be the course manager that does all the planning for this. It could be a really great project for an apprentice or, you know, a deputy or somebody else on the team. It doesn't have to be the onus that's always on the course manager to do this. So we reach out to the hosts, get their feedback. We get feedback from all the other greenkeepers that were involved. We ask for feedback from any other volunteers, so members or reps that were involved. And then, importantly, we get it from the educators and the young people as well. And we just ask questions about, you know, the quality of the resources, if the event was, you know, too long or too short, if there's anything else they wanted to see, if the young people have got any questions that they still have, because that helps us as well. If they're going away being like, well, I don't really understand why we did that, why did we do that, we need to think about that. But equally, I would say 99.99% of the time, the kids have come back with more questions because they've been inspired by it, that they've sort of been like, yeah, I'll learn about that, but then how do I learn about that as well? So that's really good as well, that they're, you know, that continued learning. And also with all the lesson plans, each one has sort of follow-up learning as well. So each one has a sort of worksheet. We have clubs that do use the worksheets on the day, but if it's, you know, windy and blowing a gale, it's quite hard to have a bit of paper out. But these are great resources for the school to take back and use as follow-up learning back in the classroom. And we give them links to other resources online that link into greenkeeping and STEM learning as well. So yeah, there's loads of different follow-up opportunities from this. And we've seen clubs that are now hosting multiple events now and that they have it on their calendar now. So for example, St Andrews have this as part of their community outreach programme. First Green sits in that and they host every single year, usually twice a year with two different schools, which is brilliant.
So it's helping greenkeepers to develop the programme if they have another First Green visit, and it's helping you build out the First Green programme going forward as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're we were under no illusion that we're not going to get this right straight away. You know, we have to develop, and it is developing, and we want it to be a developing project. It's fluid. It's always going to change and adapt, and it's important that we have that feedback. So, for example, everybody that hosts an event gets a sort of core pack that from Bigger. So we send out a first screen pin flag that they can use on the day. And clubs have used that in various ways, such as the kids have signed it, they've given it to the school, they'll frame it at the golf club, they use it on the day for photos. We give them leaflets about greenkeeping and why being a greenkeeper is really cool and how you can travel the world, etc. And they get stickers that sort of say greenkeepers make golf happen, laptop stickers. But our members have said that that's brilliant and we love that. And we always encourage clubs to put their own stuff in, like a pencil or reach out to your reps or anything that's local to you, a bag of Haribo or whatever. But our members are saying, like, we think that core pack could be a bit, you know, better as the core offering maybe. And we've always wanted that to be the case, but, you know, funding's a bit of an issue there. So we've now launched a scheme called Friends of First Green. And that is where we look for sponsorship from friends, companies, individuals, etc., that will donate a set amount towards helping build on those resources and helping things like funding. So some schools struggle to get to the golf club if it's not in walking distance, or they don't have buses, or, you know, they're not in an area where they can ask parents for a contribution. So having a fund to be able to help make it accessible for everyone would be brilliant. So that scheme's now up and running. First Green can run without it, no problem, but we can make it even better with this funding. So we are now, I'm just working on a proposal that we're going to, you know, build on that offering that we give, that kids go away with a little swag bag of goodies, because having something tangible to take home, physical, that they can talk about with their parents and families in terms of careers and workforce, etc., is really beneficial. You know, my kids go on school trips and they forget what they've done if they haven't physically got something to talk about. So it's really important to be able to do that.
Yeah, and just dwelling on Friends of First Green, you've had some pretty high profile companies coming on board early, haven't you?
Yeah, so we've got Husqvarna, we've got Seams Turfgrass, and we have Barenbrook as well at the minute as well, which is brilliant. And Barenbrook have been great as well in donating some core items for that pack. So some sunglasses and tea markers and things like that, which is brilliant. So yeah, we're really, really grateful to all of our sponsors to do that. And we are working on ways that we can include that in the pack as well, include a little thank you to our sponsors because they've made that possible, which is brilliant. So yeah, if any companies are listening that they want to also sponsor, we'd massively appreciate that. And it's really beneficial. We have a page on the First Green website that shows you the impact of First Green. So we've got a little bit of data there that shows sort of like how many events we've had, the reach, you know, what sort of numbers, primary, secondary, that kind of thing. So that's on the website for people to see, and they can see exactly what's happening. And then hopefully, in, you know, years to come, we're going to start to see a bit more data in terms of, you know, how that's worked in terms of they've done the event and now they've been employed by a golf club and where they're working, and we can start to track that as well, which would be brilliant.
It sounds like the feedback that you've had around First Green over the last couple of years, but especially in the last few months as the project's really accelerating, has been really pleasing for you.
Yeah, it has. And I think it's been a learning for me as well, because, you know, I'm go, go, go and working in the golf industry, and things don't often happen fast. So it's learning that, you know, I have to be patient. And there's certain times of the years that these things can't happen, obviously with school holidays, but ultimately, you don't have to be limited by schools either. We've seen it with youth groups. We've seen it with guides and scouts and cubs. If you don't want to go to a school, you can start, make it easy on yourself. Do it with your junior section. Get your junior section and do a little twilight session, or do something different there just as a little practice, because that's beneficial as well. I think members really enjoy being able to sort of learn about what the greenkeepers are doing as well. So yeah, there's loads of different options there.
Okay, so we've got a couple of youngsters. They've been on a First Green trip. They're really interested, and they can make a practical employment decision. They're at that age where they're seriously thinking about their next career, and they're telling people that they're really interested in becoming a greenkeeper. What happens next?
So in the core pack, we give them this leaflet that talks about how cool it is to be a greenkeeper. And on there is a QR code, which will take them to an area on our website, which is how do I become a greenkeeper? We are developing that currently, and we are working really hard as part of my role in the education team now is to make that the one-stop shop for when people Google, how do I become a greenkeeper? It goes there and you've got a whole host of information. So we are just pushing the button to send to the design team a guide to greenkeeping, an e-guide to greenkeeping that talks exactly about, you know, what are the misconceptions of what being a greenkeeper is? You know, could you do it? Do you like going to the gym? Do you like, you know, being fit and active? Do you like working outside? Do you like working as part of a team? Creating something that's visual for people that go, I could do that. I'm really interested in that. That's, you know, not stuffy, and it's not something that's, it's, greenkeeping's really moved on a lot. It's really progressive and it's really modern. Now, so we want to be able to try and highlight that, not just for school leavers, for ex-military and for second careers as well. You know, you've got a captive group of people there that work really hard, that just want a job that they feel like they're making a difference. So we're trying to create this guide for that, that then there'll be QR codes within there that'll take you to sections on the website where we've got interactive case studies from people that they can, you know, recognise themselves in. So we've got loads of ex-military members, we've got loads of second careers, people that they can see themselves in and say, well, yeah, I can definitely do that. So that's the sort of next step for my role in making sure that that's available for everyone and really dynamic so that we can really start to see some changes there.
You're really good at anticipating my questions, Jenny, because I was going to ask you next about second careers. I mean, there's obviously, I mean, you talked specifically there about people who'd been in the armed forces and perhaps people who'd been in the services. Is that where you really see the project developing in the future? There has been, in the first couple of years, this focus on young people and on getting an inspiring into careers. But is this how First Green, you think, is really going to develop?
I think so. I think definitely. I think, you know, First Green doesn't have to just be about young people. It can be as much as we want it to be. And as I was saying earlier on, for me, a learning was about, you know, these things, how they run. It's a really quiet time for it at the minute. It's the school holidays. It's difficult. We do tend to have a bit of a surge come sort of September, October time. And then Easter, springtime, they tend to be busier again. But you're not limited if you're then looking for career changers in ex-military. So I had a conversation with our education director the other day about how we've almost got a duty as an organisation and an association to help our members to make those connections with these people that are looking for second careers, and hosting maybe regional First Green events for adults where they can come along and spend a couple of hours on the golf course talking to greenkeepers about what the job is like. And I think we've got a duty to really support our members to do that. So we're looking at ways that we can make that happen as well, which will be really exciting.
Because I think Jim has said this before, Jim Croxton, bigger CEO, you know, I mean, greenkeeping is a thriving career at the moment. It's really accelerating, yet there are opportunities for people to get into the industry. You know, we're hearing all the time at the moment about the difficulties people are having in getting jobs, you know, if they've been made redundant for whatever reason, or if they're trying to, as young people, trying to get into a new industry. We're being fed this narrative all the time of it's very difficult to get jobs. And yet there are opportunities in the turf industry for people who are interested in doing that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I'm gathering case studies at the minute from people from various backgrounds, and it's really interesting to see, you know, especially women in turf care as well. It's important that their voices are shared, that, you know, we share how they've got into the industry as well, and how they've might have had struggles, or they might have had issues along the way and bumps in the road, but how they've overcome that. Because we want to just be able to show people, like, you know, the variations in the role and what they can do. You know, equipment technicians, you know, that job's really varied as well. I spoke to one of our members, David, at the Wentworth Club, and how he got into the role. You know, he's really skilled in what he did when he was in the military, and now he's able to bring that to a different organisation and a different role. You know, these are really hardworking people that want to just do well and do a really good job, and that's what greenkeeping teams need and want as well.
Feels like this project has been going at lightning speed over the last few months. We talked, you know, briefly about First Green in January at BTME, And it feels like in the 6 months since I last talked to you, First Green's gone on to another level. It's accelerated out of all proportion. So how is this project, you think, really going to develop in the future? And how exciting is that for you?
It's really exciting. I'm hugely passionate about what I do. And I hope that comes across. I really love what I do, and I love being able to help people. And yes, it's beneficial being married to a greenkeeper and living in it. But I think for me, I've got two young boys, and they see every day the passion and the hard work that goes into this job, and they see the opportunities that it can bring as well. They see the volunteering that their dad's done, and I see it with other people that I know, you know, the opportunities that people have. And I think a lot of young people and people just don't realise that that's out there, you know, that you can do all these really cool things with this job and the networking. It's a really, really special industry to be in. You know, you see it at BTME and Harrogate every January that, you know, it's really quite something to be around the network of the greenkeeping and turf community. It's something quite special. And I think if we can, you know, invite people into that and show them how special that is, then we're doing something right, really. I mean, we've got 28 events so far. We've got another event planned at Woburn in October. We've got other events in the offing. Loch Lomond are looking to host an event. There's other things in the planning. But that's nearly 1,000 students that we've introduced, our members have introduced to greenkeeping since it started, that would never have had that opportunity before, and they've never been given it, which is brilliant, really.
Couple of questions to finish off. I mean, what are you most proud of achieving so far with First Green?
I think having the repeat hosts as well. I think so. We've had a total of 17 clubs host events, and 7 of them have been repeat hosters, with some of them on 3 and 4 events so far, which is brilliant. And just seeing it in their calendar, and not just that, seeing it in schools' calendar. So we have schools that are physically contacting the clubs now that have been to say, can we do that again next year? Can we do it again next year? And sometimes it just doesn't work because if they've got championship events or, you know, competitions, that's really important to me, to see that clubs have really embraced it. And that members are, you know, our members are comfortable doing it, that you're having that community engagement, and that it's making a difference, that clubs are taking on staff from it, they've got them on the payroll. That to me is what we wanted to do.
And you said you were very passionate about it. I mean, you can clearly see that you are. What is the joy that you get out of First Green?
I think about this quite a lot, actually. I think it's on the day when I go to the events, I'd love to be able to get to them all. I just can't. And obviously it's their event as well. I want, you know, I'm there in the background taking pictures, asking questions, getting feedback. But for me, it's, yeah, seeing it all come together, seeing how proud the hosts are about doing it. You know, they almost, if you're there, they're almost like, is this okay? Is that okay? And it's like, no, it's your thing. It's entirely what you want it to be. But seeing the joy on their faces and seeing people reach out saying, I've seen what you're doing. I've seen this happening, and we're really interested. I think it's amazing. I think it's brilliant. That's great for us as an association. You know, we just want to make things better for our members and make sure that, you know, we don't get to a point where there's never a new student, Young Student Greenkeeper of the Year. We want there to be a constant stream there. And we just want to open up, you know, young people's eyes. We're not here to, you know, change careers advice, etc. in schools. We're just here to bolster it. And if we can do that by making these small little steps, then that's great.
We're not going to apologise for repeating some contact details again right at the end of the podcast. So if companies or individuals or whoever are interested in becoming a friend of First Green, if a club or a school is interested in getting involved in First Green, how do they contact you and who should they be getting in touch with?
Yep, so there's a main email address for First Green, and that is firstgreen@bigger.co.uk. That'll come through to me. It'll come through to my colleague Eve, who can handle those inquiries as well. And that's for anything. If you just got any questions about listening to this, if you want to become a friend of First Green, if you're a school, if you've got any ideas for any resources, or you think we could, you know, make it better, we're all ears. But equally, yeah, you can find all the information on the website as well.
Well, it's a clearly fantastic project that's having an important impact on the lives of many people. Jenny, thanks for joining us on the Bigger Podcast, and all the best for the future with First Green.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Steve. Thanks for having me.